Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Before we do get started, I want to encourage you, as you make your travel plans, remember to go through JohnnyDollarAir.com first. JohnnyDollarAir.com is a Priceline affiliate where you can save money by naming your own price or choosing from great published specials on hotels, airline tickets, and even more. Plus, if you go through JohnnyDollarAir.com and you end up deciding to purchase through there, part of the purchase price goes to support the show. Now let's go ahead and we'll play for you the final part of the long shot matter, and then we begin a new Carter Brown serial. That'll be coming up later, but here now is the long shot matter.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
This is Laura Considine, Mr. Dollar. You don't know me, but...
Oh, but I do, Mrs. Considine. You're the best friend a doctor ever had. Dr. Palmquist, that is.
Mr. Dollar,
he paid you a professional call the night his wife was murdered. That was lucky. Alibis don't grow on trees.
Just a minute, Mr.
Look,
Dollar.
Lady, I've been slugged, shot at. Matter of fact, someone tried to pick me off with a rifle a couple of hours ago, right near your house. Maybe Dr. Palmquist will alibi you this time. Return the courtesy.
Will you please listen? I've got to see you. I've got to talk to you.
All right, when?
An hour. The bar at your hotel.
The martinis will be waiting.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to National Underwriters Association, 1180 River Road, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the long shot matter. Expense account concluded. There were still a lot of questions, like where I was getting, trying to find out who really had killed Mrs. Palmquist. Like, was it all a smoothly planned frame on the part of her doctor husband? Or had it been a prowler killing by another man now in jail? Or had the dead woman's son, Eric, a complex we didn't know about? Mrs. Considine was 5 minutes late, but I hope she could answer some of them.
Mr. Dollar?
Oh, come now, Mrs. Considine, that reading. It implied we haven't met before, and you know that we have.
Well, I don't remember.
The day you visited Dr. Palmquist in the hospital and pretended you had the wrong room. Sit down.
There was a reason for that.
Sure, there's one for everything.
Is there? You think Victor Palmquist had something to do with his wife's death. Well, you're wrong. Completely wrong.
Correction. You don't know what I'm thinking, and being wrong is anybody's privilege.
You don't know about Victor, Mr. Dollar. What his life's been like, what he had to put up with.
Why don't you tell me, Mrs. Considine?
That wife of his. A millstone around his neck. A woman in love with a bottle.
Go on.
And that son of his, that Eric. Insane. Completely insane. He hates his father. He always has. He gains a fortune by that woman's death. But do you suspect him? No, of course not. You badger a man like Victor Palmquist. Now, does that make sense?
You're building a big thing on the fact that a lot of people hate Victor Palmquist, but you're overlooking something.
Mr. Dollar.
Where there's that much hate, there's always a good reason. I went to the hotel garage, rented a car, and pointed it toward Burbank. There was a man in a pawn shop there I wanted to see. The man who had identified Lonnie Miller as the buyer of the gun that had killed Mrs. Victor Palmquist. He turned out to be a mild, friendly little guy with thick glasses and a desire to please. He barely glanced at my identification, pushed it back over the counter to me, and smiled.
What do you want to know?
Everything you can remember about the man who bought the gun, Mr. Lerner.
What's to remember? A kind of skinny, gray-haired fella come in, said he wanted to buy a gun. I showed him one he bought.
He showed you a driver's license for identification, didn't he?
I copied the information right here in the book. Right here. Lonnie Miller, 173, Fuller, San Diego, height 6 feet, weight 152, color white hair. Here, look yourself.
Yeah. Look at this paper, Mr. Lerner. One of these, the fella?
Let me see.
Lerner adjusted his glasses and leaned forward to peer at the newspaper I'd put on the counter. It was the way I was leaning on the paper that really started the whole thing. The two pictures were side by side, Dr. Palmquist in a business suit and Lonnie Miller in a cap, leather jacket, and work pants. My arm was covering everything but the faces. Lerner moved my arm before pointing out Miller as the buyer of the gun. Then he nodded emphatically.
Sure, that's the fellow who bought the gun, that Miller.
You had to move my arm before you'd say so, Mr. Lerner.
You were covering up half the picture. What am I, a mind reader?
No, but I think you might have made the most normal mistake in the world.
Wait. You were trying to tell me this Miller didn't come in here and buy a gun from me?
That's about it.
So how come a fellow who wasn't here gave me a driver's license and said he was?
That's a good question, Mr. Lerner. There were two people I wanted to see now real bad. Lieutenant Barry at Homicide and Lonnie Miller, Cell 8A, City Jail. I streaked down to headquarters and guess what? The lieutenant was out on police business. Should be back in a while. I knew Lonnie Miller wasn't out, so I settled for him. There were only two or three questions I wanted to ask him, but they were important. I spent about 15 minutes in the cell with Miller, got my answers, and they made sense now. Then I spent an hour waiting for the lieutenant. He finally showed. This time, he was the hard sale, even after I discussed what I'd figured out at the pawn shop.
Johnny, I'm tired.
Oh, sure, me too. Now, look, Lieutenant, you know what I'm pushing is possible. Dr. Palmquist and Lonnie Miller are approximately the same size, age, coloring. Even the bone structure is fairly similar.
But they don't look alike.
They don't have to, because it's the impression that counted here.
Johnny!
That's exactly what Palmquist was counting on. Now, look, Lieutenant, you've been around. You know what people go by when they're asked to identify someone? An all-over impression.
So?
And you know a big factor is clothes, particularly the type of clothes.
All right. What are you going for?
This. If Dr. Palmquist walked into that pawn shop wearing a cap, leather jacket, and work pants, and then, 6 days later, you show the pawnbroker a picture of Lonnie Miller dressed in the same kind of clothes, you know whom he'll identify every time. Especially when he'd already seen a driver's license made out to Lonnie Miller.
1,000 ways to make a living. What did I pick,
Lieutenant?
This? Look, suppose I buy that. Where are you?
Dr. Palmquist, for some reason or other, wants his wife dead. He needs a patsy. So he picks up Lonnie Miller, a hitchhiker, on the Pacific Coast Highway.
If you say so.
At a coffee stop, the doctor remembers something he left in the car. He goes out for a minute, sticks a match or a toothpick in a tire valve, guaranteeing a flat a few miles further on. So when they stop, it's the doctor who looks at the flat, gets rid of the toothpick. Grateful for the lift, Miller changes the tire. You ever change a tire on a hot summer night?
Well, sure.
You took off your jacket, didn't you?
How else?
That's what Doc was counting on. He had a couple of minutes alone with Miller's jacket and lifted his driver's license. Then he keeps Miller in town on the promise of a job. He buys the gun at the Burbank pawn shop wearing work clothes and giving Miller's license as identification. Monday night, he killed his wife, called Miller to the house with a phony story about a job, struck him from behind, and staged the scene the police found. Smooth, huh?
Johnny, can you see me going to the DA with all that theory and no proof? Palmquist would laugh me out of town.
Barry, look.
Knock it off. You're no kid. You know I'm right. Well, don't go away mad.
Sure, I know he was right. That's what was driving me crazy. Proof. One little piece of it, but where? Oh, Palmquist had used his head all right. But the smartest ones alive always leave one little hole somewhere along the line. But 3 hours later in my hotel room, I hadn't found it. Steffi, what are you doing here?
Johnny. Eric's been drinking all day. Brooding, working himself into a rage, saying terrible things about Mrs. Considine and his father, and about his father being a murderer. I don't know what he'll do. Help me, Johnny, please.
He give you any idea of where he was headed?
He mentioned going home to get a gun and then going to Mrs. Considine's house. Johnny, I'm afraid.
All right, come on. The drive to the Palmquist house on the Palisades was a long one, but educational. Because Steffi had nothing to hide now. She was just a kid worried to death about her husband. and her bitterness toward Dr. Palmquist came rolling out.
He's an easy man to hate, my father-in-law. All charm on the outside. Petty little dictator inside. Man who's trying to prove something, who can't abide weakness. Tries to make everyone over into his own image. A horrible man.
Tell me about Eric's brother.
Paul. He was the favorite, the doctor's pride and joy. They hunted together all the time. Only one day, Paul had a cold, tried to get out of a hunting trip. This offended the doctor's weakness fetish. It made the boy feel like a coward, so Paul went hunting and died of pneumonia. Mrs. Palmquist never got over it, as you saw before she was killed. Nice, Johnny. You like the family I married into?
The house was dark when we got there. We hurried to Eric's bedroom, and Steffi leaned against the door, weak with relief. Eric lay sprawled on the bed, snoring fine alcoholic noises. The rifle he still clutched made very clear what he'd been thinking about before the liquor had taken over. We were just getting him comfortable when we heard it. A car pulling into the garage. Palmquist. I got Steffi down the back stairs and out of the house as soon as I was sure he was inside. And then I turned back. Because suddenly I was tired of a killer walking around free while everyone else stepped softly. And the anger was good. Because it suddenly drove into my mind the one thing Palmquist might have overlooked. I let myself into the garage by the small window. Moved to the doctor's big car. You ever try to force open a car trunk with a claw hammer? Don't. A, it's rough. And B, it takes your eyes off the door leading to the kitchen.
Why don't you ask me for the key, Dollar?
A gun, Doctor? No instrument of healing? Oh, that's nice. And it tells me something about the trunk. That there's a spare tire in there that's flat, but doesn't have a puncture. A service station might remember a thing like that, huh, Doctor?
That's right, Mr. Dollar. Goodbye.
He couldn't pick me off because of the car, but the car was working against me, too. You did better with a rifle yesterday, Doctor.
I'll manage, Mr.
Man my age through windows, no less.
He had it?
Nah, he'll look good in court.
Small question, Lieutenant. Not that I'm ungrateful.
Ask.
Aren't you a long way from home?
I didn't like the look in your eye when you stomped out. You know something, Johnny? You're easier to tail than a trolley car.
Expense account item 12, $71. L.A. hotel bill. Item 13, $174.90. Return airfare to Hartford. Expense account total, $490.80. Details? Eric Palmquist admitted sending us the original warning note out of fear of his father. He never knew till the death of his mother that he himself was the beneficiary. Remarks about Hollywood. Let's call it the Easterner's Revenge. Quote, it's a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. Unquote. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Now, here's our star to tell you about next week's intriguing story.
Next week, $3 million worth of a worthless gold mine. And there's blood on the desert sand. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Tony Barrett, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Virginia Gregg, Victor Perrin, Lillian Baeff, Russell Thorson, James McCallion, Edgar Berrier, Don Diamond, and Herb Butterfield. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino and Carl Fortina. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking. Thank you.
Welcome back. Well, a solid case. Not a spectacular end, but I think it was very decent. The big thing that really stands out in this episode is to come up in a way in which the desired solution is arrived at without making the police look foolish or corrupt in some way. And I think they did a good job as that. All right, well, now it's time to start a new Carter Brown series. Let's go ahead and take a listen to part one of Kudos for Colin.
Carter Brown Mysteries. Adventures in excitement and suspense, based on the best-selling novels by the slick storytelling sensation, Carter Brown.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is Carter Brown with another of my books for you, a story called Kudos for Khan, and the Khan in this case is named Joe, a private eye in the best tradition. He's got an office, a pretty secretary, and no clients, until a luscious lady walks into his life, and from then on, complications call for Khan. Now, here he is, Joe Khan himself.
When I came into the office that morning, Daisy had her feet up on the desk again. Not that I mind looking at her legs. They're very good legs. A lot of guys paid dough to see them when she was in show business. But I had a feeling that a secretary with her feet up isn't good for office routine. Not that my office had any routine.
Good morning, boss.
Daisy, put your legs down.
Why? Have I got a ladder? They look all right to me.
They look all right to me, too, but that's not the point.
So what are you worrying about?
An office is a place where you're supposed to work.
All the secretaries show their legs to the boss. You're the only one who's not interested.
I should be interested in your legs when we haven't had a client in 3 weeks.
Why don't we take a holiday, Joe? Let's go to Miami and laze on the beach. Just you and me, huh?
Get off that Miami beach before you get sunburned.
Hmm?
Daisy. The phone. It's ringing.
Oh! Hello? Oh, sure, you can see him anytime. He's not doing anything. 11 o'clock? Oh, that'll be fine. Bye.
That's a fine way to impress anyone. You can see him anytime. He's not doing anything. They'll think we're broke.
Aren't we?
That's not the point. Who was it?
A dame. Her name's Diane Clutterbuck. She sounded fat with wrinkled stockings.
What did she want?
To see you. I can't think why.
I don't know why I keep you. I should fire you.
You'd never be able to pay my back salary.
Promptly at 11, Diane Clutterbuck arrived. I took one look at her and thought of Daisy's description. Fat with wrinkled stockings. This dame looked like a Miss Universe winner taken in hand and tuned up by Vogue and Harper's Bazaar. She was a redhead with a swept-up hairdo and a figure that would have sent Cleopatra back down the Nile looking for a dietitian.
Mr. Khan?
That's me. Won't you come in and sit down?
A friend of mine recommended me to come to you. He told me you were the best private detective in the city.
Modesty forbids me saying how right he was.
I'm trying to find my sister, Mr. Khan. I've tried all the official channels, and she still can't be found. I've come to you in the hope that you might be able to achieve what the police and other authorities haven't.
How long has she been missing?
Look, I think I'd better tell you the whole story.
Yeah, that's usually a good idea.
My sister married an American serviceman in England 2 years ago. 6 months after her marriage, she came with him to America, to this city. 3 months after that, her husband was killed in a car accident. I had one or two letters after that. She wrote about coming home to England and then said she'd got a job here and thought she'd stay a while. And then the letter stopped altogether.
I see.
At last, I managed to make the trip across. Now I've been here for a month, and the authorities can find no trace of her at all. I don't even know if she's still alive.
That's tough.
Mr. Khan, I can't tell you what it would mean to know. Just to know, definitely. It's this frightening uncertainty. Even if I knew she was dead, I'd feel better.
Yeah, I can understand that. What's your sister's name?
Helen. Her married name was Duesberg.
You've got a last address?
Of course, but the police checked there. Helen had left without giving any forwarding address.
Where was she working?
A nightclub called the Casbah.
Doing what?
Dancing, that was her profession.
And what did they say?
Practically the same thing. She left suddenly without telling them why or where she was going.
So she could be anywhere in the United States, hmm?
Mr. Khan, I realize that it sounds almost an impossible task, but I'm desperate.
Okay, I'll try and find her for you.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Khan.
A couple more things. When you went to the police, who did you see?
A lieutenant named Harding.
Where did you find him?
Well, I went to the Bureau of Missing Persons. They put me in touch with the lieutenant. He was from the homicide section, I think they called it.
Homicide?
Yes.
Oh, no, not a thing. I just wanted to make sure I had it right. The other thing is, have you a picture of your sister?
Oh, yes, yes, I brought a photograph with me. Here you are.
Mm-hmm. Well, you certainly got one thing in common, you and your sister.
Oh?
You're both beautiful girls.
Well, thank you, Mr. Carr.
Lady, don't smile at me like that. You'll take my mind off my work. She gave me her sister's last address and her own. She was staying at the Astoria, and then Diane Clutterbuck curved her convex way out. Whoever said English dames had nothing needed an optometrist. This Clutterbuck babe made even Sabrina look leaner.
Yes, boss?
Daisy, is there any coffee?
Coffee? Well, it's nearly time for lunch. I thought you'd be taking me to lunch.
What would I use for money?
Haven't we got Clutterbuck for a client?
Sure.
Well, didn't she give you some dough as a retainer?
Holy... I never thought about asking for it.
What were you thinking about? No. No, don't tell me. I'm a nice girl.
You wanted to see me? I'm Harding.
Nice of you to give me your time, Lieutenant.
What do you want?
I'm Joe Kahn, a private detective. I'm working for a lady by the name of Diane Clutterbuck.
Yeah, the dame who came over from England looking for her sister?
That's right, Helen Duesberg.
Well?
I hoped you might be able to tell me something.
Now she can tell you as much as I can. The sister's missing, disappeared, that's all I know.
And the husband, Duesberg?
Got himself killed in an accident 3 or 4 months ago.
Was it an accident?
What are you getting at, Khan?
You're a homicide, Lieutenant. You aren't interested in accidents or missing persons either, for that matter. The Clutterbuck girl went to missing persons and they sent her to you. Why? Because you're tied up in the case. And the only way you could be tied up in it means that you're interested in finding Helen Duesberg because you're not satisfied that the husband died by accident.
Khan, let me give you some advice. Stay out of this. Tell the Clutterbuck woman you're sorry, but you can't do anything for her.
Look, Lieutenant, she hires me to find her sister. That's all I care about. If you've got any leads, maybe I can help.
Khan, the department needs private eyes like it needs a hole in the head. Now stay clear of this gumshoe. Or you're likely to find yourself minus a license.
Joe, what do you know?
Daisy, I'm not in the mood for riddles.
The Clutterbuck dame came good. She sent around $400 in cash.
Well, she did? That's great. Hey, wait a minute. Isn't that a new blouse you're wearing?
Uh-huh. I thought I'd grab a couple of weeks' salary before you hogged the lot.
How much have we got left?
$275.
I'll take it, thanks. All of it, all of it. Fine thing when a guy can't trust his secretary. Now listen, Daisy. I want you to call Dave Toady at the Globe. Tell him you're speaking for me and get him to look up the fires and give me what they've got in the Duesberg accident.
And what'll you be doing?
Getting spruced up to go nightclubbing.
A nightclub? Aren't you going to take me with you to celebrate?
You've done your celebrating with that new blouse. Now it's my turn. The nightclub I had in mind was the Casbah. Getting to see the manager involved a lot of phone calls and finally an escort. A hulking hood named Hank. The manager's name was Mailer.
You wanted to see me?
I'm Joe Kahn, a private eye.
Yep, I've heard of you.
I'm trying to find Helen Duesberg.
I'd like to find her, too. She was good. My floor show's never been the same without her. But I'm afraid I can't help you, Kahn.
I thought you might have something to give me a lead.
Oh, she came and asked for a job. She worked in London, she said. I gave an audition. I gave her a job. She worked here 6 weeks. One night she didn't turn up. I haven't seen her since.
There was no reason why she should want to leave the place?
Not that I know of. I was paying a good dough. She seemed quite satisfied.
You ever know Duisberg, her husband?
No. Should I?
I guess not. He was killed in a car accident a few months ago.
I never know him. Cops were around asking questions, but I told them it's a big country. People want to blow, they blow. And it makes them hard to find.
I've got to try. I got a client who's paying.
Sorry, I can't help you, Con.
Thanks for your trouble, anyway. I went back into the club and headed for a phone. Mailer was lying. I didn't know how I knew, but I was sure of it. And he hadn't really liked the reference to Duisberg. As I dialed Daisy's apartment, I was hoping she'd be home.
Hello?
Daisy, this is Joe.
Well, this is a surprise. What's the matter? Things kind of quiet at the castle?
Never mind the comedy, kid. Did you call Dave Toady?
Yes. All he could tell me was that Carl Duisberg was found in the gutter on Hope Street around 4 a.m. one morning. He must have been coming home from late shift, and he'd been hit by a truck. They never found any trace of the truck.
Late shift? That means they know the firm he worked for.
Sure. Glauben Chemical.
Thanks, Daisy. Oh, and don't expect me in the office too early tomorrow.
Why? A heavy date with a dancing girl?
No, a date with a personnel manager of Glauben Chemicals. First thing in the morning.
Yes?
Mr. Kaplan?
Yes?
My name's Joe Kahn. They gave me your name and address at Glauben Chemicals.
Oh?
It's about Carl Duisberg and his wife, Helen. I was told you were his best friend at the plant.
Yes, that's right. You'd better come in. I've been expecting you to call. Carl said either his wife or a friend of hers would come for it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
It's been a responsibility. My wife didn't like me keeping it. She said we should hand it over to the police, but I promised Carl faithfully that anything happened to him, I was to hold on to it until his wife sent for it. If you'll just wait a minute, Mr. Kahn, I'll go and get it.
I stared blankly at his back as he moved away. Whatever else I'd expected, it wasn't this. But it looked like I was in luck. And there was a lead to Helen Duisberg coming up.
Welcome back. Well, I'm kind of curious about what exactly Khan's going to receive, but the beginnings are always the strongest part of Carter Brown. They do a great job getting things started right. So we'll see how the rest of this plays out next week. Well, that will actually do it for today. Join us back here on Monday. We begin another Johnny Dollar serial, and then next Friday, we'll have the next part in Kudos for Con. In the meantime, send your comments to Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook. Facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.